Hello, I'm Malcolm Bernstein. It's time for the American Israelite program, the news of the Jews. I'm going to start off with the Jewish Family Service Community Survey. It has yielded valuable, thought-provoking results. As part of a three-year strategic planning process, Jewish Family Service recently sent out a survey to gather input from the community about current services and areas of focus for the future. The community rose to the occasion and took time to both complete the survey and provide additional thoughtful and insightful comments. Jewish Family Service CEO Liz Vogel said, "Community input is essential to understanding how well our organization is serving our clients and what opportunities exist for the future. We are committed to being the place where people turn first when they need assistance, now and in the future." The community responses to the survey revealed important themes about the value existing services provided by JFS. Aging services, food pantry, and mental health case management for the Jewish community were ranked high. In addition, support for Holocaust survivors, financial emergency assistance, homelessness support, and case management to help navigate government programs and referrals to other resources were recognized as having significant impact. Many of the respondents indicated that they had difficulty ranking the services and felt all of them were vital to the community. Examples of the feedback include, "It's very important to have the services offered in formats that are generally not duplicated in the region. Be certain that while other agencies may be doing something similar, the quality of JFS needs to make it stand out as special as the people being served. To rank these is very challenging, as the importance of each is great. Food, housing are vital, as is emergency service. Long-term, mental health and case management are crucial as well. I believe essential basics, shelter and food, should be first priority." What does this mean to the Jewish community of Cincinnati? Jewish Family Service will continue to devote its efforts towards strengthening lives in times of need and will leverage the strategic plan results to that end. JFS is striving to balance the extensive needs of the community with the feasibility of addressing those needs in a comprehensive yet cost-effective manner. The agency is also exploring fee-based services where applicable to increase sustainability. With strong expertise and qualifications among the staff, professionals, and lay leaders in alignment with community needs, JFS is confident that the final results of the strategic plan will ensure a solid and straightforward path into the future. In an interesting comment in the national news, actor Daniel Radcliffe broke down in tears on television after reading his great-grandfather's suicide note, which he possibly wrote after suffering anti-Semitic prejudice at the hands of the British police. The scene was filmed for the television show Who Do You Think You Are?, a British show similar to public broadcasting system PBS's Finding Your Roots, in which celebrities learn about their family histories. The Harry Potter actor's relative, Samuel Gershon, had been ruined by a 1936 robbery at his family's jewelry business in the London neighborhood of Hatton Garden, but police accused the Jewish businessman of faking the raid to claim insurance cash in what may have been anti-Semitic treatment by the officers. Gershon took his own life at age 42. The insurance company eventually did pay the claim. Evidence suggesting that detectives were anti-Semitic and reluctant to properly investigate the crime include a police report that said, according to The Sun, "Jews are so frequently responsible for bringing down their own business premises." Radcliffe said it was very jarring to see being a Jew to be taken as a piece of evidence in itself. "You just want to reach into the past and just go whatever you're going through. You have so much to offer people who are around you still. You have so much to give them. Radcliffe's maternal ancestors were from Poland and Russia, while his father is from Northern Ireland. And although that dealt with a death, here are some others. A body believed to be that of a rabbi who jumped into the ocean in Virginia to save a student was found off the coast of North Carolina. Volunteers looking for Reuben Bauman, 35, found the body on July 14th, 5 days after the teacher at Yeshiva Toras Chaim in Norfolk, Virginia, jumped into choppy waters at False Cape State Park in Virginia after a student, said to be 13 years old. The student made it safely to shore, but the rabbi never returned and was believed to have been swept away by rip currents. And police in Oregon believe they've found the remains of the body of Charles Levin, a Jewish actor who played an edgy mole on the episode of Seinfeld and had gone missing earlier this month. He was reported missing from Grants Pass, Oregon on July 8th by his son. The resident found Levin's car, an orange 2012 Fiat, in a remote and nearly cut-off road Saturday. They found the remains of his fawn-colored pug, Boo Boo Bear, inside the vehicle. President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke on the phone recently about increased tensions in Iran. The two leaders discussed cooperation between the United States and Israel in advancing shared national security interests, including efforts to prevent Iran's malign actions in the region. That in a statement from the White House a week ago describing the call that had taken place the day before. The two discussed regional developments and security issues, especially Iran, the Israeli statement said. Prime Minister Netanyahu expressed his appreciation for President Trump's intention to increase the sanctions on Iran. Tensions between Western nations and Iran have increased in recent weeks, particularly in the Strait of Hormuz, through which much of the world's oil supply transits. Iran is also abrogating parts of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal because Trump has pulled out of it. The deal swapped sanctions relief for rollbacks in Iran's nuclear program. President Trump has reimposed most of the sanctions lifted under the deal, and this week said he would add more. A bill to ensure the rights of Californians to hang mezuzahs on their door frames is moving to the state legislature. It bars landlords and condo associations from prohibiting the display of religious items of a certain size on doors and door frames. Known to some as the mezuzah bill, although it has the support of secular organizations such as Catholic and Hindu, the bill follows complaints from Jewish renters and condo owners who were told to remove their mezuzahs because of a building or apartment complex policy. The bill is sailing through the State House in Sacramento and passed the Assembly 72-0 on July 8th, having already been approved by the Senate. Five other states, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Rhode Island, and Texas, already have similar laws in force. Dr. Gary Zola, executive director of the Jacob Rader Marcus Center of the American Jewish Archives in Cincinnati, attended the annual Congressional Tribute event on May 15th at the U.S. Senate, marking May as Jewish American Heritage Month. Also in attendance were U.S. senators and House members, government officials, diplomats, national Jewish leaders, including Senators Richard Blumenthal, Sherrod Brown, Doug Jones, Tim Kaine, Robert Menendez, Jackie Rosen, Gene Shaheen, and Representatives Joseph Kennedy, Carolyn Maloney, Brad Schneider, Tom Suozzi, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The event honored a prominent Jewish philanthropist, Harvey Lippmann, for his lifelong commitment to numerous charities and humanitarian organizations benefiting millions of people across the world. Lippmann, founder and CEO of Genesis 10, a worldwide high-tech staffing and solutions company, is deeply involved in social justice causes that improve the lives not just of fellow Jews in America, but of people of all faiths all over the world. Dr. Zola has known Lippmann since 2011, the year that President Barack Obama appointed him to serve on the U.S. Commission for the Preservation of America's Heritage Abroad. Zola said, Harley is a deeply compassionate human being whose love for his fellow man has impacted our world in so many ways. More recently, Mr. Lippmann has engaged in efforts to locate the remains of Jews murdered by the Nazis during World War II and buried in unmarked graves throughout Poland. He has undertaken the challenge of finding mass graves so that memorial plaques can be erected by the U.S. Commission to honor and bring dignity to victims. The annual celebration, first began in 1980, is a week in April dedicated to American Jewry. And in 2006, President George W. Bush, at the request of Congress, dedicated the month of May as Jewish American Heritage Month. Since 2006, Zola has been a member of the Jewish American Heritage Month's advisory board, which seeks to encourage Americans to deepen their knowledge of the many significant contributions Jews have made over the course of American history. Let's take a look at the Sedra of the week. Parshat Balak. This from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. What is the true message of an entire Torah portion dedicated to the hiring of a Gentile soothsayer to curse the Israelite nation, but who instead becomes inspired to bless Israel and portray the ultimate messianic destiny of Israel in the most exalted and majestic of poetic metaphors? Are there indeed individuals with true powers to foretell future events? And ought we to seek out such individuals to help us tackle difficult moments in our lives which threaten to overwhelm us? And if indeed Bilim is a superior human being with profound prophetic insights emanating from a divine source, why does the Torah triumphantly record the fact that Bilim ben Beor, the magician, was killed by Israel with a sword amongst the corpses of our Midianite enemies during the conquest of Israel? That from Joshua 13:22. And why does our biblical text juxtapose the sublime poetry of Bilam with the seemingly ridiculous tale of the talking donkey? I believe that from a certain perspective, the entire portion of Bilam is a study in contrasts between the legitimately earned prophecy of Moses and the venality of the inspired sorcery of Bilam. The Torah understands that individuals may exist who appear to have been born with special powers, superior physical strength, a phenomenal photographic memory, sharp vision which can penetrate the thickest of partitions, intense concentration that can cause physical objects to explode, and perhaps even the ability to bring messages from the dead. There is even a difference of opinion amongst our sages as to whether such phenomena reflect actual occurrences or are merely sleight of hand trickery. When the Bible records King Saul's last-ditch attempt to discover his destiny by asking the witch of Endor to seek the counsel of the dead Samuel, and she indeed provides the true message that the Almighty will tear the kingdom from your hands and give it over to your friend David, the commentators are divided as to the factual truth of the account. Rabbeinu Saadia Gaon accepts the biblical theory as it is written, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Hafni Gaon insists that the witch of Endor deceived King Saul. That from 1 Samuel 28 in its Geonic commentary. In a later generation, the arch-rationalist Maimonides called all pronouncements emanating from supernatural communications and insights, including the writing and wearing of mystical amulets, false and vain, bordering on idolatry. On this basis, Rabbi Yosef Karo similarly dismisses all magical incantations as not availing in the least, but merely exercising positive psychological influence upon individuals in distress. The Gaon of Vilna, on the other hand, suggests that Maimonides' philosophical study misled or corrupted him, insisting that there are amulets and incantations, and perhaps even communications from the beyond, which are rooted in the sacred and divine. Perhaps the most important and representative view on the issue is presented by Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderet, when he had to judge the credibility of a Rabbi Nissim who claimed to have received messages from an angel. The great Talmudic scholar Rashba insists that divine communication akin to prophecy can only rest on one who is truly wise and pious, strong and courageous, and sufficiently wealthy not to be in need of monetary contributions from those seeking his advice. Claims, and even what seem to be empirical facts, of supernatural abilities by individuals who are not outstanding in Torah scholarship and piety dare not be taken seriously at the risk of flirting with idolatrous and even demonic blandishments. The truth is that the Bible is indubitably clear when it warns us against seeking after any manner of magic or sorcery, and exhorts us to be wholehearted and pure in our service of the divine. Our prophets did not major in futuristic prophecies, but rather in inciting more ethical and genuine behavior. They certainly did not take remuneration for their words. Any individual devoid of the proper and difficult to acquire intellectual and spiritual prophetic attainments, who makes pronouncements which may appear to be vindicated by future discoveries, is no better than the talking donkey in our Torah portion. A prophet of God must first and foremost be a model of Torah scholarship and piety. Hence, the talking donkey may serve as a metaphor for all soothsayers devoid of proper qualifications of piety and intellect. Moses was a prophet of God, Bilaam a soothsayer. Moses sought divine truth, while Bilaam yearned for silver and gold. Bilaam's conclusion is the most succinct and specific. There is no sorcery for Jacob nor magic for Israel. Behold, the people shall rise up as a lioness and shall lift up himself as a lion. He shall not lie down until he eats of the prey and makes corpses of the wicked. That from Numbers 23, chapters 23 and 4, verses 23 and 4 of this week's Parsha. Rashi explains this verse metaphorically. When individuals rise early for their Torah study, they triumph like the lion cub, grabbing onto the commandments. wearing the ritual fringes, reciting the Shema, and putting on the phylacteries. They do not eat before reciting the evening prayer, and they destroy the wicked as when they killed Bileam the soothsayer. Numbers 23:24 is interpreted by Rashi through the eyes of our sages. Also see Joshua 13:22. We must seek for God by performing the commandments as sincerely and punctiliously as possible. Going after wonder workers or soothsayers is at best a waste of time, and at worst, fleeting with idolatry. Shabbat Shalom from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, Chancellor Emeritus of Or Torah Stone, and Chief Rabbi of Ephrat Israel. Jewish comedians aim to deflate modern anti-Semitism with laughs. As long as there have been Jews, there have been two unwavering constants: anti-Semitism and Jewish jokes about anti-Semitism, like the one about the assassination of Tsar Alexander of Russia in 1881, when a government official approaches a rabbi and growls, "I assume you know who was behind it." The rabbi replies, "I have no idea, but I'm sure the government will blame the Jews and the chimney sweeps." Confused, the official asks, "Why the chimney sweeps?" The rabbi responds, "Why the Jews?" While philosophers and historians have long debated the persistence of anti-Jewish stereotypes, Jewish comedians have been trying to undermine the peddlers with laughs. One hilarious and revealing example comes courtesy of Elon Gold, an in-demand comic with a Netflix special and regular gigs on late-night talk shows. "We Jews are just like everyone else," Gold said last year on The Late Late Show with James Corden. "We all have three basic human needs: sex, money, and food. We just want them in a different order." As the audience laughed knowingly, Gold continued, "For the rest of the world, it's sex, money, and food. But for us, which number one?" At which point the entire crowd yelled, "Money." Without missing a beat, Gold exclaimed, "How dare you?" Then he added sarcastically, "I like how that was in unison without any reservation or hesitation." Comedians talk about what bothers them, and this anti-Semitism really bothers me, Gold told me ahead of his four shows at this year's Just for Laughs Festival, which starts on July 22nd in Montreal. "It's like what Mel Brooks said about his Springtime for Hitler. Humor is my greatest weapon. Our revenge is with jokes, and not just against the Nazis of old, but sadly, current-day neo-Nazis. The only way Modi and I can fight them is by mocking them and expressing the ignorance of their bigotry." Modi is the Jewish-born comedian and actor Mordechai Rosenfeld, who will be Gold's first-ever comedy partner in Montreal. He said, "We've never been a team before. We're not the Jewish Abbott and Costello, but when we get together, something magical happens." The show, entitled Elon Gold and Modi, 2-for-1, is the epitome of everything I've done in the past in Montreal, but now it's Jew squared. It's so much fun. It will be Gold's 13th time at the prestigious event. He's a graduate of modern-day Orthodox schools in Yeshiva University High School, has been taking on Jewish hatred for years. Most notably, in a 2017 set he called pro-Semite. "In these days of synagogue massacres and glowing anti-Semitism," he says, "we talk about it even more." Why did Kellyanne Conway ask a Jewish reporter about his ethnicity? What was Kellyanne Conway trying to say when she asked a Jewish reporter, "What is your ethnicity?" during a press gaggle Tuesday at the White House breakfast media correspondent Andrew Feinberg asked the White House counselor a question about President Donald Trump's tweet condemning four Democratic congresswomen for loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. In the same tweet, Trump suggested lawmakers, all women of color, should go back to the places from which they came. Feinberg asked Conway which countries she thought the president had in mind. Replied Kelly, "What's your ethnicity?" When Feinberg responded, "Why is that relevant?" she continued, "No, no, because I'm asking you a question. My ancestors are from Ireland and Italy." Feinberg later said he hadn't a clue why Conway asked the question. So what did she mean? Twitter liberals played this as Conway trying to other a Jewish reporter, or at least insinuating that perhaps Feinberg had an ethnic affinity for the Squad, as the four freshman lawmakers have come to be known. CNN's Chris Silica wrote, "It feels as though Conway is asking for proof of some sort of lineage before she's willing to answer the question from Feinberg." Feinberg, for the record, didn't see it that way. Although he felt the question was bizarre, he tweeted, "No, I don't think she was being anti-Semitic." Trump, meanwhile, has been defending his own remarks by saying that all four of the congresswomen are anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. In a sorry, not sorry follow-up tweet, Conway tries to explain. "It was meant with no disrespect," she said of her question to Feinberg. "We're all from somewhere else originally. I asked the question to answer the question and volunteered my own ethnicity, Italian and Irish. Like many, I'm proud of my ethnicity. I love the U.S. and grateful to God to be an American." Bereshit, the Israeli moon landing lunar module, will not attempt a second try. Instead, the Bereshit Israel Aerospace Industries parent will be cooperating with Firefly Aerospace, Inc., a manufacturer of economical and dependable launch vehicles, which has announced on July 9th that it has signed an intellectual property and engineering support agreement with Israel Aerospace Industries for technology based on the Bereshit lunar spacecraft. Firefly is one of nine companies selected by NASA to participate in the Commercial Lunar Payload Services program to deliver science payloads to the surface of the moon. Well, let's take a look at the calendar for the coming week. At the Holocaust and Humanities Center on Saturday the 20th, tomorrow, 11 a.m. to noon, The Tiny Torah in Space, a gallery talk with Henry Fenichel. On the 21st, Sunday, 10 to 10:30, Wise Temple's Summer Jewish Music Class. And on Friday, July 26th, noon to 1 p.m. at Wise Temple, a shofar workshop. Tonight, candlelighting at 8:42, Shabbos and Saturday at 9:43. And that's it for this week for the American Israelite Program, the News of the Jews. I'm Malcolm Bernstein. I'll be back with you again next week. Till then, bye-bye.